The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this Sunday morning talk. And this morning I'm going to talk about mudita brahmavihara. It's a Pali word for abiding in the divine quality of rejoicing, rejoicement. The word is often translated into English as sympathetic joy or as appreciative joy. And I think it gets said in a single word very nicely with the English word rejoice. And maybe we're a little shy to use the word rejoice in the Vipassana world because it's maybe feels a little bit too emotional or excited and to rejoice. But in fact, it's nothing wrong with being, have some strong energy of delight and joy coursing through us that is rejoicing. Rejoicing also has a quality of clearly recognizing something, appreciating something, valuing something, and almost maybe even rejoicing is kind of naming it or feeling a certain surge of happiness in very particularly in relationship to it. There's a wonderful term in Pali called anumonada. It's more commonly translated as rejoice, and to celebrate wonderful things that happen in the world, to celebrate the goodness of others and their generosity, their success, their good things that happen to people, and to really to rejoice and celebrate has also a contagious quality to it that maybe is a little bit different than delight, which maybe is a little, can be calmer and more personal. The word mudita, this word that's translated that's often as sympathetic joy, comes from the verb modati, which means, the dictionary definitions is to rejoice, to enjoy oneself with, and to be happy. And so this is one of the four places to abide, because vihara means a place of abiding, to dwell. And so the idea is to dwell in delight or rejoicing, just as we can dwell in compassion and we can dwell in loving kindness and kindness or goodwill. And last week, Jozen Gibson gave a talk on compassion, and it was wonderful that in many ways. I was happy to you could meet him. He's a wonderful new teacher. But also he was setting up the theme of compassion during the 7 a.m. sittings that week. And today, maybe inspired by him, I'm going to talk about sympathetic joy because that's the topic for the 7 a.m. sittings for the next week. And it's kind of a coincidence that this worked out, but for some people this is a season for joy, this time of year. And so it's nice that in Buddhism, we can also focus on this particular wonderful quality. One of the reasons I like rejoicing as a translation of mudita is that in my mind, I connect it to the topic of generosity in the sense that when we rejoice or celebrate, we are giving joy. It's a gift of joy. So it's one thing to rejoice privately in oneself to feel delight and happiness. But I think of it just like compassion is something that is meant for the world to share. Goodwill is something to share with the world. So this mudita is something we share with the world. And so it's something we offer, and to give joy gives a very different feeling for what mudita is than if you just say appreciative joy. But to celebrate and offer joy or expand joy or spread joy in our delight. Maybe it's contagious a little bit to feel, to express this and to do it. And so certainly joy, happiness, well-being, gladness. There's many words for this these qualities of well-being in the teachings of the Buddha. And there was a real expectation that this was a very important part of the path. And it's a wonderful kind of, I don't know if it's a paradox, maybe doesn't have to be, but that the Buddha's path is a path to the ending of suffering. And that path, along that path, there is joy and happiness, delight, gladness, that are stepping stones on that path, that's part of that path. That we address suffering in a very honest way in Buddhism, but not so that we can suffer better, but so that the suffering can, we can find our way through it, and that way through it goes through a phase of all kinds of experiences of joy and happiness and delight. The Buddha was, when the epitaphs for the Buddha was, the happy one. And and it was often, not often, but we know we have records of that in the ancient times, people commented on the joyfulness of the Buddhist community, the followers of the Buddha. So joy is an important part of all this. But I think it's a nice principle to understand that a crowded mind has very little room for joy. And it's very easy to go through a day in a life with a mind crowded with concerns and complaints and troubles and challenges and resentments and jealousies and planning and rumination. And it's easy to kind of get caught up in all our concerns and ride them review them and revisit them and churn them out. Kind of a whirlpool of concerns that the mind, thinking mind, can have. And some of those concerns are certainly valid. But when we're in the whirlpool of thoughts around those concerns, I don't know how useful it is. When the mind becomes crowded with preoccupations, I don't know how useful that is. Certainly useful to deliberately and intentionally address our challenges, but to be in the whirlpool of them, I don't think is so good. But the most important thing I want to emphasize here is a crowded mind has no room for joy, has no room for appreciation. That if you go into your kitchen, like I did this morning, to make breakfast, I had a choice. Do I think about the different things that I have to do today and my concerns? And do I spend my time filling my mind with thoughts about a talk on appreciation and joy and rejoicing? Or do I make room in my mind to really be there in the experience of making breakfast and to appreciate the things that are there, to appreciate just the clarity in the moment of this particular thing? And I have a particular bowl that I eat breakfast from. And that bowl was, I know the person who made the bowl. And it was a gift that my wife gave me. It's a beautiful bowl. It was made with one of my favorite colors. So it's just like, you know, there's just, it kind of was there on the counter and kind of sparkling and clean. And just picking it up and touching it. And I just felt this, in the moment, a kind of clarity, kind of delight, appreciation, a kind of a pleasure of just this bowl that I wouldn't have felt if I'd been busy thinking about my concerns of the day and my get preoccupied. And it turns out there's many more opportunities for appreciation, for delight, for beauty, for well-being, for respect, for gratitude in our lives than I think most people avail themselves of. I think that because of this crowded mind. Now, one of the things that gets in the way of appreciation, of joy, delight, is some idea that we're not supposed to experience those things. Some idea that if we're really serious, that we would be serious. That we would be preoccupied and angry and concerned and worrying about things. And that we're guilty and, you know, the world's going up in flames and the only thing that we're allowed to do is to be anxious and preoccupied and caught up in it, or feeling guilty that we're not doing enough, and you know, and just in this world, a swirl of thoughts and ideas, and that, you know, to stop, to quiet the mind, to pause, and to notice the details of our life that we can appreciate, the particular things that go on, and what's here for us, right in front of us, and here and present. To take the time to, if you go shopping, to notice the checkout clerk, and to notice and appreciate the person, and take time just to notice and see, you don't have to let the person know you're doing this, but can you take in the person so they are not just take them for granted, so it might as well be a robot, but really to take in this is a human being with a background, a history, and challenges and joys, and really kind of take in and try to get a fuller sense of the person so that there can be some appreciation. After all, the person is doing a service for you. So a crowded mind has very little room for joy. A mind that is not crowded with thoughts and ideas has a lot of room for a lot of things, and delight, appreciation, gratitude, and joy is what I want to emphasize today and for this week. There could also be the protest that it's selfish and self-centered to be involved in joy, and there's so much suffering in the world, and so, you know, we should get serious and maybe suffer ourselves because of it, and not really allow ourselves to feel joy. On the path to the liberation from joy, this beautiful path, it is a path that allows us to really feel and experience suffering much more strongly, more openly. Strongly maybe is not the right word, but more clearly. And as the practice deepens, most people who do this meditation practice become much more sensitized, aware, and open to experience the suffering around them, and also to experience our own suffering in a deeper way and fuller way. So what I'd like to propose is that the ability to be open to joy, open to delight, is exactly the same ability to be open to suffering in a useful way. It's kind of like it's the same door in our heart. And whether we want to make sure that door can swing open and the hinges are well lubricated and it's easy to open. And so if you learn to do that for joy, then the door is also learning to do it for suffering. If we're learning it to do it for suffering, then appreciate how that door is opening. There's non-resistance, non-clinging, non-resentment, non-pushing away. It's just openness to it. And then as we go through our lives without the mind being crowded, that open door policy that we have in our hearts, when you see a beautiful bowl that was a gift on your counter, kitchen counter, then there's joy and delight and happiness in that. And when you encounter someone who's suffering, then there's compassion for that. When you're walking down the street and you see, you know, someone that maybe you don't know, but, you know, the person greets you. And so you offer, your open door offers a greeting back in goodwill and friendliness. And so this ability to have the doors open, this is what allows for these things to go on. So rather than focusing on needing to be now delightful and appreciating and grateful, or needing to be compassionate, the mindfulness practice has no need of what we're supposed to be, has no requirement you're supposed to be loving or compassionate. What mindfulness is about is noticing where we're stuck, where the door doesn't open, and helping us to relax and open, to release, so the doors of the heart can swing open easily and anytime. And then we can talk more seriously about, I don't know if that's the right word, more seriously about joy, about rejoicing. So this idea of sympathetic joy, or rejoicing in the fortune, well-being, success of others, and for oneself as well, it can't be selfish, because selfishness is a symptom of a closed door. Self-preoccupation is a crowded mind which is conceited. And that mudita is actually seen as an antidote to conceit. It's an antidote to selfishness. It's an antidote to self-preoccupation, because it's the ability to open up the door and appreciate and delight in other people's success is not an easy thing to do. It's often been said that this third Brahmavihara, sympathetic joy, is the hardest one for people to experience or to have. It seems like maybe there's easy to feel resentful of other people's success, or be jealous of their success, envious of them, or to feel somehow that their success says something about ourselves. If they're being successful, well, I'm not, and therefore I must be lousy. And so it becomes a self-concern again, back to conceit, back to self-preoccupation, back to that crowded whirlpool of thoughts, oh, poor me, and I'm not really up to it. They're doing really well, and I'm not. I've been left behind. And so, you know, it's so easy to get caught up in self-concern around all this, and or ideas that they don't deserve it. I remember when I was in Burma meditating, where there was a group of Americans meditating there, and there was didn't talk hardly at all, but there was one man that we showed up the same day, and we had a few little bit of conversations occasionally, very occasionally. And but I remember many months into it, there was a woman who had some really deep kind of realization experience, and you know, something that people go meditate to experience and to have happen, and something to celebrate. And when this person I knew heard that this woman had this experience, he got upset, and he said, "No, it can't be. I knew her back in the United States, and no way that she can have done that." And he was just all kind of upset and angry and resisting the very idea of, rather than celebrating her good fortune, appreciating it, rejoicing, "Wow, this is so great. She came here for this, and she got what she wanted." So this thing about the doors of the heart being able to open is a very important principle, because I think many spiritual traditions, not just Buddhism, points out that it's easy to pursue happiness the wrong way. To actively try to manufacture happiness or be happy doesn't really work very well, or to put together the pieces in our life that'll make us happy. The right relationship, the right job, the right home, the right thing, the right anything. Then I'll be happy. And sometimes people confuse pleasure with happiness. And pleasure itself is often in many spiritual traditions, not just Buddhism, as I just said also, that pleasure is often considered to have a dual edge. Certainly pleasure is pleasurable, but it often can come along with disappointment, discomfort, suffering, because pleasure is often temporary, and it you know, unless the object that's bringing pleasure continues, we'll lose the pleasure, and then we don't have that piece of caffeine, that piece of delight, or that piece of energy that we were holding on to or expecting or kind of depending on. Also, too much focus on pleasure is an alienation from something deep in ourselves, some deeper sense of well-being, something that's more enduring. And this is what spirituality is often looking for, is a more enduring, deeper feeling of well-being, of happiness and joy, that doesn't so much depend on what's going on in the world around us. The conditions of life don't have to be just right so we can be happy. But we have this wellspring of happiness that can be there even if the conditions of life around us are not going so well. So rather than pursuing happiness directly, there's a movement towards opening the doors, learning this process of not clinging, not holding on, not resisting, not being assertive and grabbing on and wanting, and but being available. Being available when we show up at the kitchen counter for the bowl that's there. Being available as we eat our breakfast to appreciate that, oh, this is pretty special, this food and how it got to us and what we're doing, what we're having, what we're eating. To appreciate, to have room and openness, to notice when someone is celebrating, someone has success and happiness. Or to notice the things about other people that can be appreciated. Things that take a little bit of time to study and look at and be present for. If we're in the whirlpool of thoughts and concerns, we're not really able to take in another person fully. But to take in another person more fully, and enough so we start appreciating people. And if we appreciate people, maybe we can be grateful for people. Or we can start feeling some delight and joy in people. Perhaps we can rejoice in others just because we know them, just because they are who they are. In addition, for whatever success they have. And that traditionally, the idea of rejoicing in the good fortune of others is not only for spiritual success, you know, that somehow they become happier, more open, and more loving, and but also for any kind of success, healthy dharmic success, dharmic meaning that doesn't cause any harm to anybody, and any success that doesn't cause any harm, and that could be that they receive gifts or resources or all kinds of things that you know, maybe you don't receive. But rather than feeling like, oh, you know, why do they get that and I don't get it? You know, they won and I didn't win. Celebrate their winning, rather than suffering over the loss. Wow, they won! Isn't that fantastic? I happen to lose the race, but how wonderful that they won. There's a wonderful little teaching, I think, that when the sun sets for you, it's rising for someone else. When it's winter in the northern hemisphere, it's summer in the southern hemisphere. That if you're in a kind of, maybe you're playing a game, it's about winning. If you lose, guess what? Someone else has won. Rather than looking at everything from the point of view only of me, myself, and mine, and the impact for me, and how it is for me, and my comfort, and well-being, and my success, and my status, to have the doors open, the mind not crowded with self-concern, and to be available to really appreciate and delight and how it is for other people. And paradoxically, doing this is a phenomenal vehicle for your own happiness. Turns out that doing something like this can bring more happiness than if you celebrated your own win, if you won the game. There is a kind of joy or happiness that comes with winning. But you might look next time you win something or get benefit from something at the expense of someone else, like they lost the game. I believe that there's a more lasting, my experience, more lasting, deeper, more satisfying sense of well-being that you'll benefit, you'll win, actually, in some kind of way, if you really appreciate and rejoice and celebrate their win. Your loss maybe is incidental. You don't have to be so concerned about whether or not you lost and what it means and how people see you or something. play the game well, but then rejoice in how someone else wins. And I suspect that, as I said, you'll feel better, more at ease, and it'll be more enduring to celebrate that win in someone else than to celebrate your own win if you did. So it's a fascinating and wonderful and profound way to live a life, is to have your doors able to be well lubricated, well able to open, to be at ease, to not cling, and to walk through the world and then respond with, or have the heart response with friendliness when friendliness is called on, compassion when compassion is called on, and with rejoicing when rejoicing is called on. Don't shortchange yourself. Allow yourself to rejoice more often. Allow yourself to have this joy, sympathetic joy, appreciative joy. Let go more so that you can rejoice and appreciate and delight in the good fortune of others and in the goodness of others, the beauty of others, the wonderfulness of all beings. May your rejoicing be your gift to the world, the gift of joy that helps other people feel more at ease and safe and happy, and so it's easier for other people to feel also a settled joy and happiness and well-being. May all beings be happy, and may we contribute to that happening. Thank you.